But away from the triviality and to more important subjects, we'll talk about debt recovery, particularly for contractors who would have expected to have taken on a very safe job building education buildings, you know, BER buildings, and other economic stimulus buildings put together by the Housing Department. One of the high-profile companies that's gone to the wall is Pearl, and we spoke to our plumbing contractor who's out of pocket by well over $100,000. He mentioned a concreting contractor who was out of pocket by about $1 million. Is there a way they can get their money back even if the government don't necessarily come to the party? Anthony Igra is a debt recovery expert and general manager of Contractors Debt Recovery, and we found him via one of our callers last year who said that the government did put into place some sort of legislation. Now, Anthony's on the line. G'day, Anthony. How are you, mate?
Good, Nick. Yourself?
Not too bad. Now, we heard from one of our callers last week that you could put a particular wording on your invoices which almost guaranteed that you would be paid. Is that correct?
No, that's not quite right. There's no guarantee. If there was a guarantee you could be paid, I'd be a very, very rich man.
But, if there was a secret guarantee that only you knew.
Yes. Look, the legislation is known as the Security of Payment Act. It's state-based legislation. It's now in effect right around the country, just about in similar form.
Right.
It is a simple way in which a party in a construction contract who hasn't been paid can run a payment claim against a party whom they allege is not paying them or not paying them for the value of the work, and have the matter decided or adjudicated outside the court system rapidly and at low cost.
Right.
Okay, because the way to rip subbies off is simply to put them under financial strain and then either do a deal or not pay them at all, and they face 2 years and tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars in court to recover the money.
Right, so this is a tactic, you're saying. You put them under so much stress that they settle for 50 cents or, you know, 70 cents in the dollar or something.
That's a well-worn trail. You just don't pay a subby for 3 months and he'll accept half, many cases half or maybe a little bit more or maybe less. But this act allows them to make a claim and run the matter to adjudication for a fraction of the cost. 95% of the cases I run, the adjudication costs are under $3,000, and you can go from a claim to a decision in approximately 5 weeks. The adjudicator's decision can be lodged in court as a judgment debt, which is what you get after a court case. So instead of going through a court case, you can just follow this process. Unfortunately, very little is known of how this works amongst the construction community generally. New South Wales is an enormous construction market, and there are still only just under 1,000 adjudications a year. Now, that is a tiny drop in the ocean in terms of all the payment disputes.
I mean, are you saying that this is little known amongst people that have done their trade and they're going out as subcontractors?
Look, yes, they know the name of it, and many of them on their invoices say this is a payment claim made under the Building and Construction Industry Security Act, but beyond that, they don't know what to do with it, how to use it, et cetera, et cetera. And it has developed. It's been in force for 10 years in New South Wales, and they don't quite know. I think it's a little out of the skill set to start to write submissions and make arguments. Mm. The defendants in these situations are normally either head contractors, builders of some kind, and sometimes developers when builders aren't being paid. But they're simply not equipped to deal with law firms that send in these two lever arch binder defences. Now, I love that sort of thing, but I suppose that's why I exist, because...
Yeah, so people would use someone like you to do the job on their behalf, do they? But is that worth it for $3,000?
No, what I'm saying is the costs are $3,000. What I'm saying is you can get a judgment for 60, 80, 100 grand, and your costs are $3,000. If you are owed $3,000...
Ah, right. Okay, I understand. Right. Now, even if someone went through that either by themselves or with an agent... if in the case of a company such as, you know, Pearl, which has gone into administration, perhaps they go into bankruptcy eventually, even if you've done everything correctly, if there's no money in the pot from the company, are you still out of pocket?
Yes, you are.
Right.
You are still out of pocket. Now, I've been following this closely, and one thing has to be made clear is that there are a number of factors that go into situations like Pearl, and I've looked at many of them, and in fact, I was contacted by two Pearl contractors a month ago before this sort of broke. The issue is that...
So they had wind of it. They're falling way and way behind well before it hit the media.
Yeah, they were owed a fortune. They rang me. I tend to know these things beforehand.
Yeah, well, I suppose that's your business, isn't it? Yeah.
But the fact is that there are a number of things. First of all, subcontractors cannot walk away from their own requirement to mitigate risks in their business. They still run businesses, and there is risk, and there is high risk in construction. Now, they should never be in a position where they're owed $300,000 or let's say 3 or 4 months worth of progress claims. If you're not getting paid 1 month or part payment 1 month or 2 months, do something. Run a claim under the Security of Payment Act. Stick your hand up. Make a noise. Unfortunately, because of what we talked about before, they will, on the promise of being paid, shut their mouths. And then the builder falls over, and then everyone comes out of the woodwork and says, I'm owed $100, $300, $500. They should never allow themselves.
I did want to ask about that, because it seems in construction people do run up these enormous debts and pay their contractors out. We heard about our plumbing contractor who has reached into his own pocket and paid for his excavator and paid for all the stuff. He's paid all the everyone else.
Crazy.
And he's left, and it runs off. What do you think of the way of doing business in Australia where all this debt piles up on the backs of these subcontractors?
Yeah, it's ridiculous, and as I say to them, I say it with love, they do it, they're their own worst enemy. They should act fast, act hard, and act early in order to not be so far behind in payments when or if a builder does fall over. The other aspect that they can do is to get a creditor's insurance. Did you know that you can insure yourself when a company goes under?
No.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Been around for 40 years.
So what do you do? Is this like a bank insuring?
No.
You pay insurance when you take out a mortgage just in case you default?
Absolutely.
It's essentially the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah. You can take an insurance policy. It's called creditors insurance. I don't want to name providers, but there are big providers.
But in general, this is something you can do.
Yeah. I'll floor you right now. You know what it'll cost you? It'll cost you generally, not case by case, but generally, it will cost you around 0.5% of your annual turnover, and you can pay by instalment.
Bloody hell!
So if you're doing let's say a small subbie's doing $800,000 a year, a policy might cost him $8,000. Let's call it $10,000. He pays 10 equal instalments over a year. So for $1,000 a month, you can insure yourself. So now a builder falls over owing you, let's say $200,000. You can get a check for around 80 to 85% of the face value of your debt. So you walk away with, let's say, a check for $160,000 if you're owed $200,000.
And it seems, wow, I had no idea. Oh, cool. Well, I'm not a tradesman, and I'm not expected to know that.
Yeah.
Do we need some sort of financial literacy training at TAFEs for tradespeople?
Absolutely.
You know, they get their ticket and they come out highly skilled, but they need to know how to run their business, and they need to know this information.
It's probably one of the bigger gaps that I've certainly identified, which is a gap between the skill of your trade and the business of your trade. And I do think that part of TAFE training should be these kinds of issues: payment, risk management.
Mm.
Business training and business modules have found their way into a lot of trade training at TAFE, but I think some street cunning needs to be brought in as well. There are very experienced tradespeople and clients of mine that have big businesses and had never heard of it either. But it's all available to you. So they're the two things that subbies can do to mitigate their risk. The other part of it is in the government's hand. In government contracts, if they're going to do financial assessments, and they need to appoint builders in line with those assessments. Now, whether they have or haven't, I think will come out in due course. But that is a risk management aspect coming from the government. And the other, which is totally missing, there needs to be some kind of in-progress oversight of these projects. It's all very well to assess a company and say, well, you look okay, now go build me a school, here's $20 million. And after that point, all the government gets are these statutory declarations saying that everyone's been paid. Well, as has emerged from Pearl, it appears on what has been published that there are stat decks signed that everyone's been paid, and apparently, clearly, not everyone's been paid. Now, the entire industry operates off false declarations. nations. Everyone knows that.
Well, I wanted to get onto that. I wonder how much of a problem with this is a diplomatic one, where you've got a relationship between a subby and a builder and a developer, and there's all this. No, mate, just hold off. You know, we'll pay you next week, next month, whatever.
Yeah.
And so you hold off from getting this judgment because that's perceived as a bit of a, you know, a slight or an insult.
That's very true. That is a very strong cultural norm in the industry. I'll call it good blokeism. I've written about it extensively.
Yeah.
Everyone is trying to be a good bloke. Now, everyone's good blokes at the beginning of the job, but by the end of it, there are no good blokes to be found. And one thing that contractors need to be aware of, that before you start work, everyone's a good bloke and they're buying each other coffees and scrambled eggs for breakfast. Okay. But I'm telling you that when it comes to payment issues, your client will retreat to the contract to the letter very quickly. So while they're prepared to be a good bloke, as long as you're prepared not to press for payment, the minute you do vigorously press for payment, that relationship vanishes. So what I say to subcontractors is be a good bloke with your mates, but these builders or whoever it is, they are your clients. That is a business relationship, and business runs on fee for service, and that's what it is.
Mm. Anthony, it's been just fascinating talking to you, mate, and I thank you very much for giving us a few minutes.
No worries, Nick. Pleasure.
I'll see you later. Anthony Igra, who's a debt recovery expert, especially for contractors. So I'm sure if you put him in a website, you could look him up and see what he's written. He's absolutely educated me, I have to tell you.